not of my flesh, nor of my bone, but still miraculously my own. Never forget for a single minute. You may not have grown under my heart, but you grew in it. That's a quote by Fleur Conkling Heiliger. Hey, hey, welcome to Zoe's Corner, where we keep it real and raw with a little bit of fun. I'm Zoe, aka Mrs. Chibs, and this is my cozy corner of the world where I document my life's crazy and amazing journey. The highs, the lows, and all the messy, beautiful moments in between. We're talking faith, finances, love, life lessons, you name it. And through it all, I'm on a mission. ICE. Inspire, create, and encourage. And that's what I hope each episode does for you. So whether you're sipping coffee, stuck in traffic, or just chilling at home, buckle up, get comfy, and let's have some real talk. No filters, no fluff, just life as it is. Ready? Let's dive in. Hi everyone, welcome back to Zoe's Corner. You may or may not know that November is Adoption Awareness Month. And so just to highlight it, we decided to dedicate the episodes for November to be all about adoption. When I think of adoption, I think of the first time I was exposed to adoption was when I learned about Moses in the Bible. How Moses was actually the first fostered child that we learn of in the Bible, who eventually became adopted by Potiphar's daughter. You guys know how much I love the Prince of Egypt, and again, it's coming back even into this episode. I think I talk about the Prince of Egypt so many times, but there's just so many lessons to be picked out of the story of Moses, which includes adoption. And so adoption is something that has been close to my heart from the time I think I was like maybe 10, possibly 10, somewhere there. And I've been privileged to know a lot of people in my life that have adopted before. Some are family, some are friends. And yeah, it's just, it's really amazing. And also personally, myself, I've been adopted into God's kingdom as a child of God. You guys know that I am not Jewish. You know that I was not born in Israel. You guys know. You know that I'm not a Jew by descent. But God, in his mercy and in his love and his goodness, has adopted us to be heirs in his kingdom. And so we have access to God and all his benefits just as much as you would say a Jew. So yeah, so to begin this episode, I am welcomed with a special guest. We will call her Mama, and Mama is a Zambian who has adopted before and is quite passionate about adoption. So Mama has been brave enough to come on to share her story as a mother who grew her family through adoption, and so she will be giving us some insight on what the process was like for her, any challenges she has faced, any benefits she has faced, the reasons why she chose to expand her family in this way, and just many, many, many more questions. So, hi, Mama. Welcome to Zoe's Corner.
Hi, Zoe, and thank you for having me. Hi, viewers.
Yes.
I hope you enjoyed this episode.
I'm sure they will, definitely. I know Zoe's Corner is all about inspiring, creating, and encouraging. And I know for a fact that at the end of this episode, people will feel inspired to grow their family through adoption, as well as be encouraged to take that step. So We haven't started yet, but I'm already excited and I'm already confident that, yeah, it's gonna be amazing. So, Mama, just to get us started, can you share what inspired you to consider expanding your family through adoption? Like, when were you exposed to this concept?
That question is very, I get that question a lot, and it's a hard question to answer for me because I don't think there's like a particular moment. So I'll try and answer it in two ways.
Mm-hmm.
One, I think in my early years, maybe teen or preteens, or even just as a child, I would be moved every time I heard that maybe there was a child that had been abandoned in the neighborhood. And I'll just think to myself, I'm like, oh, you know, I wish they'd actually left the child at our doorstep and we would have taken care of that child. So it's not like there was one particular moment, but every time I heard of such a scenario, my heart would just leap out. I'm like, oh, we could have had that child.
Mm.
And I mean, bear in mind, I was a kid and I probably didn't have any parenting skills.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay, maybe I did because I'm the first born. So that was it. But when people ask what's the inspiration, I always ask the question back to them, what's the inspiration for you having a bio child when you decide to get pregnant? There isn't like a very good or single reason to do that. You just do that because you sort of have an instinct to parent, provide, and protect humanity or offspring.
Mm.
And I think that would be the answer. That just, that inner feeling to parent, protect, and provide.
Mm.
And yeah, it didn't matter where the child is coming from. So I guess that would be the answer. But that's the inspiration. Like, you don't need an aha moment or a soul turning into poor moment for me in particular.
So
yeah.
So with that answer, that means from the time you were young, family didn't just mean bio family. Like, for a very long time, you have genuinely believed that you can have a family that you are not biologically related to, right?
I think, as an adult looking back at it, I think that would be the case. Those would be the words to use.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think about how, I grew up in as an African, I think we have a concept of everyone's child.
Yeah.
My grandmother embracing everybody. You don't really get to question like, oh, how are we related? How is this person fit into the grand scheme of our family?
Mm.
If they're in your grandma's house, they are your family. So I might not have had the concept or the words to describe that concept as a child, but maybe now as an adult and the exposure, you can see that, like, as long as you claim that person to be yours and your family.
That's amazing. Yeah, you are totally right. We as Africans do have a culture of adoption. It's just not the legal process, but it is a huge part of our culture. And I think whenever I speak to people about adoption, people are quite skeptical, and you have to actually remind them that actually, don't you remember someone who you thought was your cousin, and then you discover that actually that's just the neighbor's child who lives with your other cousins? You know, like, there is that history, so it's not as foreign as people make it.
Yeah, because when we officially presented the case. It's funny I'm saying the case when I officially went to my family and said, this is the approach we'd be taking. I first went to my dad, and then he wasn't at all shocked by the whole thing.
Yeah.
He just said, oh yeah, this is what we've always done. It's just that now people need to get papers for what we did need to. So as you rightly put it, it's a concept we've always had, but we just didn't have the legal system.
Yeah.
As long as we claimed, it was so. Mm. But now it's just that you need the papers, you know, for legal issues and protection of the child.
Yeah. A lot of people say things like adoption is a white people thing, or adoption is something that pastors do, or adoption is something that people do when they are unable to have a bio child. So do you fit into any of those categories? Are you maybe not white, but maybe you lived abroad for many years, so you have that Western mentality of adoption, since it's what, you know, it's like adoption is beautiful, but only in the movies. Adoption is beautiful, but only in America. Adoption is beautiful, but only for, you know, white people.
Such or a race.
Yes, or it's for like mostly interracial adoptions, that kind of experience. So do you fit into that category? Because I think it's something that normally comes up. Like, you ask someone about adoption, it's like, yeah, no, that's a Western thing, you know. So do you fit into any of those categories? Maybe are you in ministry? Or maybe you are a social worker, because, you know, they say social workers have really big hearts. You don't have to let us know what your profession is, but... just trying to break that myth that people that adopt are in those classes. And if you're not in those, if you're not classified in those, then adoption is not for you.
I'm definitely very far from any of the things that you said. I mean, by my voice, if that is even clear, I am not white. I think one of the things that... you haven't included, excuse me, in the description is being rich. People also ascribe it.
Oh yes, you need to be super rich, super wealthy,
yes.
Where you have a mansion with many rooms that you want to fill.
Yeah, my father's house are many mansions. So no, I'm neither white, nor rich, nor a social worker, nor in ministry. You just have to be a person who wants to be a parent. In fact, when we started out on this journey, I was a civil servant.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people know how much civil servants get.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't much, but we were comfortable enough to provide for ourselves and the family. And it goes back to just the question of you want to protect, provide, and profess this person.
Mm.
If you are ready to have a biological child, I would argue you are ready for adoption, because those are the things that everybody needs.
Mm.
And you don't, I mean, the things that a biological child needs is what an adopted child would need, because they're just basic human needs.
Mm.
And I think the assumption that you need to be rich or you need to be white is because we equate being white to having means.
Mm.
Excuse me. But the top layer of that is because in the movies or on YouTube, people are fundraising or they need this much amount to adopt. But that's not the case in the Zambian system. You don't need to pay large sums of money.
Mm.
All you need is to buy forms, which are around the same price as you would pay for any government form
Mm.
that you need to fill out. So there are a lot of services that government requires, and we've all paid for some of those forms. That is ideally the same thing. So you don't need a lot of wealth. And for ministry, I think that's because maybe people in ministry already have hearts that are elastic. But again, I just say, if you have an elastic heart to be a parent in whatever form it comes, then you will go for it. And adoption is one of those forms to which parenting comes. So you don't need to be a special person.
Yeah. And I like what you said. It's like, do you want to be a parent or do you want to carry a child?
Mm-hmm. You know?
So I think,
and I think although those are related, they're two different things.
Yeah.
You know, because there are people who are able to carry, but we all agree should not be parents.
Yeah.
And there are people who would be brilliant parents, but unable to carry. And I think for me, the paramount thing is the ability to be a parent.
Yeah.
That's very important.
So you mentioned, how you can easily pay for a government form in order to get the process started. Can you share a bit of the adoption process? We will be interviewing a social worker, so you don't have to get into like the nitty-gritties, but yeah, how, first of all, who did you speak to when you started this process? Did you do the research on your own? Were you friends with a social worker? Did you know someone in your life who had already adopted? Like, how can you walk us through how you began your first steps?
Right. So, when we had finally thought, like, oh, we have things in place. We have a home that's cozy enough, and we are quote unquote stable.
Mm-hmm.
I reached out to a family member. Why I reached out to this particular person? In fact, it was two family members. One, because she had worked at, she had interned actually at a home for children in need. Mm-hmm. So I felt that she would have information about the things that we needed to tick for us to start the process. And this is a person who actually told me that you need, that the law in Zambia says you need to be at least 21 years older than the prospective child. Then you need your copies of NRCs, bank statement, medical form, and fingerprints.
Okay.
And from that list that she gave me, I reached out to another family member to help me with the, like, understand the medical processes for it, because remember I said you need a medical form filled in and signed in. So this family member, the second family member, was in the medical system and they'll be able to give me more information. So that's how we started out, and then that first family member also gave me a contact for the facility, and we contacted the facility and we made an appointment for an interview. They came home, they assessed our home, and this might be like a jittery area for people if we relate it to the assumption that you need to be rich. So they're not looking for a mansion, they're just ensuring that the house or the home has basic infrastructure.
Yeah.
For a child to be safe. Is there running water? It doesn't even really need to be in the house. Because we know our Zambians set up.
Yeah.
At least it should be, you know, water within reasonable distance, because children need a bath, children need to drink.
Yeah.
Or everybody needs a bath anyway. So yeah, those are some of the things. Are the doors fine? Just the basic, to ensure that the child is secure.
Yeah.
They asked us some questions about our background, the families we grew up in, what we do for a living, what's the motivation for this route. And then after that, they made a report. And during that period, as they were compiling the report from the interview, they told us to get fingerprints. And I think that's the part now where some payments are needed. Because we all know, even when you're being employed, you will have to pay for your fingerprints.
Yeah.
And I do know that things are, I think, back then, I don't know if things have changed. So what I'm describing might be different. I do know that there's a certain law that has changed with regards to adoption. And so maybe the requirements might be different. But anyway, back to the story, we did our fingerprints and we had to pay for that. And the price was different from the price that we paid for employment fingerprints. I remember this clearly because when we did the fingerprints, it was maybe some months or a few years after I had started employment in the civil service. So I had to get fingerprints so I could, I was able to compare the prices. And then the medical report also has to come from the government institution. I think we had to pay for that one. I think we do pay for the medical report. I'm losing memory here. But yeah, those are the things. And when they compiled everything, that I remember I said we went through a care facility for children. So when they got all those details and paperwork from us, they submitted to social welfare. And I can't remember whether that's district social welfare or provincial or the national office, but it's an office behind Levy. So they take that and then it goes up and up and up for approval. And it took several months for us to be approved. The social welfare office also called for a personal interview because they thought we were a little too young for this process, but we explained, but I just explained like what the inspiration was. And I remember clearly saying that there are a lot of the Zambia median age at marriage is around 18, and we are in our late 20s, and yet there are so many people who are parents by the age of 18. So that means we're like even way older than most of the parents, and we'll be well fitted, you know, when stable employment and stuff. So if these children are thriving and surviving with younger couples, then, you know, we're suited for this. So, yeah, after a few months, we got a call that we had been approved. And then it was months later, if not a year, when we got a call that we had been matched with a child. And between being matched with a child and having the child home and actually having the adoption paper itself, there's also just a lot of bureaucratic and administrative work.
I can imagine. Done.
It's not a linear process.
Yeah, because I wanted to actually ask the emotional part of adoption. I hear a lot about the waiting window and how exhausting it can be. I remember speaking to someone who had been waiting to be matched, and they didn't understand the process and the time that it could take long, again depending on the preference that they applied for, which I'll also ask you about that coming up. But like, I think they had thought that the moment you apply, within like 2 weeks you would get the call and, you know, the child would be placed in your care. So they went all out, like they painted the nursery, they bought a lot of things, and then month after month things are collecting dust, month after month, you know, becoming more and more heartbreaking because there was that expectation that this would happen sooner than later. And now you don't even have it in the horizon, you know? So emotionally, like, how was that process like for you as you were first waiting to be matched and then also waiting to be placed? Because if you, I'm sure you, when you spoke to your family and you told them, this is what we intend to do with expanding our family, I'm sure like every 3 weeks, it's like, is there any call yet? You know, like people are always like, 5 months have passed up to now. No, what about this? No, you know, that kind of thing. So how was it like emotionally just in your home, number one, and then also with, I won't say pressure, but you know, when people keep asking how far, there is some sort of pressure that does come with that. So what was it like for you?
So I approach this in, I think, three ways. First, I want to address the expectations or the thought of people about how adoption works. And then secondly, when the point at which we actually went to our family, and then now go to the emotional part of it.
Okay.
So a lot of people think because they are facilities of care, and I call them facilities of care, and a lot of people are more familiar with the word orphanage. I try to run away from that because not every child that is in that facility is an orphanage. So I think of them as facilities of care. So a lot of people think because they are children in these homes, then they are just quote-unquote ready, available. Like it's a shop. You go in there and pick. But that's not how it works because not everyone is available for adoption. Some children are there because maybe their family is just in a, between a hard place and a rock, and they're trying to figure things out. And this is the safest place they can take their kids. And for the ones that can be adopted, not all of them are suitable for your family. And maybe this is another conversation, or you could ask the social worker when they come on one of the episodes. So yeah, it's not like just because there are children there, then you have a child tomorrow. That's not how it works. There are some children that are available that need to be cleared to ensure that all the background work has been done, that maybe nobody will come and claim them, that even if they have a family, maybe this family is really sure that they want another family to raise this child, or to just ensure that or at least this child does have a family member up here. They do relinquish or sign the papers and stuff like that. So that adds to the waiting. And then with telling our family, we didn't tell them immediately. We started the process. We told them after we had been approved. So that cut out a large chunk in time for them to ask. And I think it also just depends on the relationship you have with your family.
Yeah.
And I mean, because we are the ones who approach them with the news, they're waiting that we will tell them when it actually finally materializes. I think some of these conversations, like around parenting and whatnot, it's like, with regards to pregnancy, when a pregnancy happens, like African families don't usually ask, like families don't come as pregnant. So when are you, when they wait for a pregnancy to happen. So I think maybe that's the general approach. So basically the emotional roller coaster we were riding was just, I think, on our part. Having this expectation and then checking in with your social worker, like, oh, how far are we? I have seen this pair of boots. Should I buy them? What size should I buy? How ready do you want us? So we would, again, excuse me, we would check in frequently with our social worker. Sometimes we have to apologize. I'm like, I'm sorry. I know I called you a few days ago, but I am in a baby shop. Do you think I should get this size? And they were so nice because they've probably heard from numerous, I mean, they've been through this with numerous families. So yeah, in a nutshell, it was more the emotional things we were going through were basically, I don't know, self-inflicted or coming from us than from our family. But yeah, eventually it happened, and maybe the question that might arise is like, how long does it take? I think it's a case by case because depending on getting, you're able to kind of specify the gender that you want and the age, so some of the specifics might not be matched with the treatment that are available for you. And also just there's a lot of things that go into matching. I've heard that there's a spiritual leader, there's a social or a psychologist on the board.
That's amazing.
There's police and different people who just sit and review your file and review the number. There's a number of parents, there's a number of children, and they're trying to ensure that this is the best fit. So sometimes, yes, they might be triggered, but then they're matched to another family and you have to wait. But yeah, that's part of the waiting process. More like, you know, like the biological child that you just never really know.
Yeah.
What you're going to get. Like members are saying, Mondale child, you don't know what you're going to get. And then when the child does finally come, you're like, oh my God. This child is like about 99, my great grandmother. So, yeah, I mean, so many things I've talked about.
No, thank you. Thank you so much. There's a lot of insight into this. I think you have answered a lot of another question I was about to ask. So you have been saying we. I would like to assume that you are married, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And how was this process with regards to your marriage? Did it bring you closer? And do you think? I mean, you've stated that you've been your heart would be moved when you would hear stories about abandoned children and all of that, but is that the same for your husband? Did you have to convince him? Did he just agree for the sake of agreeing? Is it something you spoke about as you were dating? Like how did you, like, I would like you to talk about the marriage aspect, because I think there is also a stereotype that, you know, it's women who are more we are the nurturers, so it's rare that a man would want to adopt. So yeah, so take us through the process of your marriage, if you can. Did you have to convince him? Did you get the process started and then he eventually got on board? Or yeah, and just emotionally, as you mentioned, like, how has it been for the two of you? Were you the only one feeling all the emotions when you walked into a baby store? Did he feel the same way? Yeah. And just it would be nice to someday interview him as well. But you know that men are stereotypically known to, like, he's not going to go to his friends and be like, oh, guys, you know, this is what my wife and I are planning to do. I'm so excited. So, yeah, just take us through that process. If it has challenged your marriage or benefited your marriage, if both of you were in agreement and all of that.
So I think I don't really have a comparison to before marriage, because we started this conversation when we were dating.
Oh, great.
And told him, like, oh, this is one of the forms of parenting. I mean, one of the ways that I want to be a parent.
Mm.
And he's like, oh, yeah, I need to go out about it. But I've just never, like, this is what I want, but I just never really thought through it practically, like, what would be the steps to do it. So I'm grateful that I found the person who, prior to our meeting, already had these thoughts. The only difference is I had thought through what we need to do to get there. And actually, one of our dates, I don't know if I should call it a date, as we're waiting, was at a care facility. Like, we went and visited and took some stuff at a care facility, and that cemented that this is a path that we want to go on to, with the kind of the way that we'd want one or more kids.
That's amazing. True. That you went on a date to a care facility. That's crazy. Yeah. That's unheard. Yeah.
It's weird.
It's really amazing. Weird. I think of how you spoke about how babies get matched. I think you guys also got matched. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Those are called meeting somewhere.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so there isn't really a comparison to before we got married, because we're already on this path. Even as we were getting married, we had set the ball rolling. Mm. There were steps that were already taken. So we are 100% on the same page. There were times that I was more invested, like maybe at the beginning, because I was the one who knew the practicalities of the dream.
Mm.
And then he starts running me, like visiting his office, talking to him and who. But I was definitely the one who was calling the childcare facility, like, hey, where are we at? Should I buy these clothes and stuff? I don't think men are really invested in the meeting, which is like the details. Like, I don't think they even visit baby shops and be like, oh, I am imagining my future child will look nice in this thing.
Mm.
So I think like different pages of the emotional book.
Yeah.
But yeah, carried the this thing together in different ways.
That's amazing.
Like different stages of process.
And in the wait, would there be days when you're feeling overwhelmed, like it's taking forever, and then he comes and supports mm-hmm. you, or vice versa?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yes.
what would that look like? Would it look like giving you a very big hug, or maybe giving you a card for Mother's Day before being placed with the child? Can you give us one example?
It's more of him doing the practical aspects of it when I'm just irritated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a person who, I remember my aunt saying, I am more like, is it Paul who just goes to evangelize
mm-hmm.
and needs results fast?
Mm-hmm.
And he's more of, I don't know if it's Peter who nurtures the congregation or something. He's more patient.
Mm.
So for me, I want, if I fight in this thing, I need you to call me quickly. So in those days where we are waiting and where I'm just like, I am so irritated, he would be the one going to these offices with dealing with the paperwork when I don't want to do this. When we were finally matched and the child was released every weekend into our care, I just couldn't stomach the days when we would have to take the child back to the facility.
Mm.
And he would be the one to go with the child. Because I was just like, this is just emotional. Like, okay, for the 2 days I was a mom, and then now I'm not anymore. And then the process of just really pushing back the child. So he would be the one who's holding us up and taking the child back while I stay home and just keep myself busy so that I don't break. Yeah, so it's not necessarily the hands and stuff. It's in a different way.
Yeah, no, definitely. I can totally see that, just how you describe your husband. I think you swapped them. I think Peter is the one who's like, repent now, you know, and then Paul, yes, and then Paul is the one who is, you know, gentle, writing books like, come on guys, don't be like this, you know, be like this. And Peter is the one who, I think he's the one who even sliced off someone's ear when they came to arrest Jesus before he got crucified. So yeah, okay,
yeah,
all right, Mama Peter. That's your new name.
Yeah.
And so, how did you prepare yourself, like mentally, emotionally, physically, for welcoming the child? Did you? I think because you didn't know exactly what age. I mean, I've heard that you can request for an age and a gender, as you said, but then it's not always guaranteed that you will get what you ask for. So if you're asking for a boy who is maybe 1 year, and then they find a boy who is 1 year, 6 months, they can still present that child to you and tell them why they thought they were a match. But then you would have bought clothes for like a 1 year old and not an 18-month-old. So, did you maybe buy things that don't need an age? Or maybe you bought things that don't expire? Like maybe, you know, lotion, soap, things like that instead of actual food. Maybe you didn't buy diapers because you didn't know the size. Maybe you bought like a car seat or something. Like, how did you emotionally and mentally? Also, normally, when people are expecting biologically, they have this time to read books. You know, they join.
Related to other parents.
Yes, they join communities. You have your aunties with 9 kids who are telling you, oh no, you know, this heartburn means this. Oh, this thing means that, you know, that they're mentally preparing you for certain things. But with adoption, you don't necessarily, it's so vast. So you can't really get that kind of preparation.
And not common.
Yes, exactly. And not common. And also, I think because adoption is not really spoken about much, so you find that many people are actually pursuing it, but no one is saying anything about it. So how did you have a community? How did you prepare yourself? Was there a community involved? Did you buy things? Or maybe you just saved money and then you said, okay, we will buy on this day.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's, you know, when you say, did you save money? We should have done that. But because we had, we had predictable income monthly, maybe we did really think about that. We should have saved, not knowing the exact size.
Yeah.
So anyway, so we had an estimation of what age range the child might be, but it when we were finally matched, it was just like slightly over, maybe like by two months. But to answer the question more directly, the physical preparation, we did not buy stuff. So remember when I was asking, like, should I buy? I would be calling the social worker and the social worker would be like, no, just wait. It's not like when we match you, then immediately the child will come home. So you will sort of have some breathing space. And thankfully they do have, because this child has been in a facility of care, you have that transition period where they can, if you don't have anything at all, they can, you can be using the stuff that they
were using.
They have, yeah, the facility of care. So the only thing I have bought is this pair of tights.
Pardon? Can you say that again?
The only thing that I remember buying,
mm-hmm.
like prior, was this pair of tights that I really, really loved.
Mm.
And I knew that they would fit a child from a certain age range to this age range. And that's what's nice about kids' clothing, is that they come in ranges and are very specific. So yeah, no, we didn't buy things until we finally got a call.
Mm.
We were told, and that's when we bought a few things, especially like the perishable stuff like lotion.
Mm.
We bought them when we got the call.
Okay.
The emotional part of it, and as you embark on this journey, I think I forgot to say that part of the requirements is to go through training.
Okay.
So government, through their facilities of care, provide a training where you learn about the emotional needs, especially the emotional needs of a child, the legalities of everything.
Mm.
And so that was helpful. And it was during that training that we built a community with people.
Mm.
And the good thing about this training is that you have people who are at the beginning of the journey and some that already have children. So parents at different stages of this parenting form. And so you can learn from them. But also your social worker can be a good source of information. And not forgetting your own parents, because like I said, a lot of the stuff is just how our parents parented.
Mm.
So like I remember, even to this day, the most useful piece of information my father has ever given me about parenting was like, oh, the kids will emotionally blackmail you. They know which parent is the weakest link, and they will blackmail that parent. And it's been useful for this journey. Just see my child crying, I'm like, I know you're crying. Sometimes, like now that they're older, I'm like, are you crying because it's just me? Would you cry if it was your dad?
Yeah.
And more often than not, they're crying because it's just me, and they know they can easily get away with stuff.
So you are the weakest link.
Unfortunately, and I never thought I would be. I thought I would be the wolf. but no, they don't take me seriously, this kid. So, I mean, yeah, so you prepare emotionally through that training, and there's a lot of resources online. I listened to adoption podcasts. There are two which are my favorite. There's Creating a Family, and there's, I think, the adoption podcast, and then there are books, and the families that you meet on this journey also have a lot of information, and don't neglect your own parents' advice.
Yeah, okay. Okay, just wrapping it up, what do you wish more people understood about adoption? Like if someone is thinking about adoption but they're not really sure about it, what's something you would say to them?
I would say, one, it's more common than you think. We walk among you, adopted children, adopted parents, we're your neighbor, we're that shopkeeper, we're everywhere.
Mm.
You just don't know. And so if you think it's not happening, like you're walking on this road alone, you've never been walked before, no, a lot of people are, and they're just as normal as everyday as you. And secondly, and probably related to the first thing, is you don't need money at all.
Mm.
If you're able to feed yourself right now, then you're able to adopt.
Mm.
If you are wanting to be a parent, then you're able to adopt.
Mm.
That's parenting is fulfilling. And it doesn't matter how it comes. And maybe take this opportunity to address the fears that people have, like, oh, I don't know where this child is coming from. What if we said that? And I always answer, like, but you don't know where your biological child is also coming from.
Mm.
What if they have these behaviors or whatever it is that you're fearing? It could happen in a biological child, it could happen in everybody. We have that uncle or aunt who, you know, is different.
Mm.
And we never would, the parents would never have guessed, like I earlier alluded to, and by saying, oh, the new child. And what that literally means is that the womb is like a harbor.
Mm.
And different sizes and types of boats dock at that harbor.
Mm.
So that's how children are. You never know what God gives you. And you just need to be ready.
Yeah. Yeah, no. What's any final message to share during Adoption Awareness Month? Like, what will you be doing? Is there like a walk? Is there like, how do you spread awareness about adoption? Do you?
Oh my gosh!
Is it just like personal conversation? Do you I say this is the last question, but it's filled with many questions. When you're introducing your children to people, do you maybe say, oh yeah, these four are adopted, oh this one is from here, or this two? And then is that how you bring awareness to adoption? Do you maybe have a podcast that's all about adoption? Do you pioneer adoption walks? Like, how everyone spreads awareness in different ways. Others, it's just a conversation starter. So how do you spread awareness about adoption, especially during this month, or even just throughout the year? Like, how is that for you? I know definitely coming onto Zoe's Corner is a way in which that can happen. But from my understanding of adoption, it is quite a delicate topic, not just for the parents, but for the child as well. So how do you navigate that with regards to adoption awareness?
It's like you said, it's a what's the best word? Is it a tightrope to walk on? Mm. I don't know, something that you need to balance, because it's not your story as a parent.
Mm.
So you have to balance the needs and privacy of your child's story.
Mm.
Versus you wanting a lot of people to know, to know about it, that this is how families are created.
Mm.
So we've never publicly talk about this as something that our family knows, but that we don't publicly talk about it. And it's not a secret, it's just not for the public domain. So we are definitely not pioneering walks. We're not writing books or any of that sort of a thing. It's just more of a private matter. But there are situations where you think that this is ripe. Like if you're in a situation where a parent comes up to me and they start saying, oh, we want to grow a family, and you know, these are the options of that. And then we would take that opportunity and share, like, oh, have you thought of this way?
Mm.
So we're definitely not public, and we are about using intimate moments to steer people to something that they might have already been on the path, but are maybe not sure, or don't have the words for it, or don't see the possibility of it happening. But there is a I think two pages on Facebook. I can't remember the other one, but they saw adoption is beautiful, adoption Zambia somewhere. And they don't accept no regular posts, but you can reach out if you have questions about this particular topic. Another way we've thought through is maybe going through churches, but then again, we're like, is this something that I'm gonna, like, I mean, it's always in the minds of adult parents, like, oh, is this something that our children or child would be comfortable? So, I don't know. I think, maybe waiting until they're of age and if this is something that they want to talk about publicly. The main issue is that this is not necessarily our story. We can offer our perspective as parents, but this is definitely not our story.
No, thank you so much, Mama. I really appreciate your insights. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for coming on here. And I look forward to hopefully interviewing either just a general male or your partner, just to get the perspective from the lens of a Zambian man, who an African man who is happy to expand his family through adoption. But thank you so much. It has been amazing. I hope you had a great experience as well, and happy Adoption Awareness Month to you.
Thank you, and same to you. Adoption is for everybody.
Yes, it truly is.
So yeah, happy adoption. I hope people go out looking for information and asking questions during this month. Thank you for having me, because I really enjoyed talking about it. I'm passionate about this topic, even if I am not public about it. So thank you for the platform. Our hope is just to make people see that it's possible. It's a possible option.
Yeah.
For people. And so this platform has been one way we can do that. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So thank you so much for coming on to let us know that it is normal. There is someone we know who has a story. We just don't know. We just haven't asked. You know, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
Alrighty. Bye.
Bye.
And that's a wrap on this episode of Zoe's Corner. I hope you got a little dose of inspiration, a fresh perspective, or maybe even a good laugh along the way. If you loved this episode, don't forget to subscribe, share it with a friend, and leave a review. It means the world to me. And hey, let's keep this conversation going. Connect with me on Instagram at zoes.corner or at missconnie25 and let me know your thoughts. Until next time, step out of your corner and into the world. Go out, shine bright, and let Jesus be seen in all that you do. Catch you on the next one. Bye.